if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 188. It's cold and frosty here in the UK and Ireland, but this week we are taking you to warmer climes as the PGA Tour travels to Mexico for the WWT Championship at Mayakoba, with the European Tour in the Algarve for the Portugal Masters. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's golf betting action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, chaps.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics, and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. On Twitter, Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our golf betting system Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the golf betting show every week. I'll be recording one of those shows directly after we finish this podcast. Please subscribe and like the shows on YouTube. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever you call it these days. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. You leave your name and where you are in the review. This one is entitled, "These Fools Are Growing On Me." 5 stars. Been listening for about a year and actively investing in their light-hearted advice. Have to admit, my Euro bets are quite profitable and the PGA tips are strong. Starting to hear Bamford and his guys' references on other podcasts and radio shows. So get to subscribing before the fame sets in! And that is from mbryan55, and he is in the US of A. Thank you, M. Bryan. Much appreciated.
I like it. Thank you.
Very good. Very good.
Radio
You're
shows.
Famous already, Steve, aren't you?
Famous.
Yeah, you were the most spotted when we went down to Wentworth.
I think that's the out of control grey beard, and because I'm 6'4" and you're not.
Yeah. It's slightly more conspicuous, I guess.
When M. Bryan's using the term fools, it instantly takes me to Mr. T back in the 18. You crazy fool. I felt a bit like that last week watching the Bermuda Championship as two of my guys finished one shot outside of the each way money. So that was interesting. But I know, I've got a sneaky feeling that both Russell Knox and Graham McDowell are going to be very, very popular picks this week for the Mayakoba tournament on the PGA Tour over in Cancun. Well, is it? I think it's. Is it near Cancun? I think it's on that stretch of the Mexican coast.
They're two quite compatible tracks, aren't they?
Very compatible. And then, of course, you've got the RSM Classic next week, which is on Sea Island in Georgia, So another coastal. So you get this kind of coastal swing at the end of the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and you often get players popping up regularly who play well in any or all of those events, or year after year. It's a it's something you can start to draw your comparable course lines to quite nicely. So
it's short hitter season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
a lot of courses the short hitters can compete on in a stretch. They must be it's supposed to be nice to have a few of them in a row rather than just dotted amongst the season, so they get a chance to really kind of tighten their game in.
Yeah.
We hope.
At least I've got it slightly wrong. It's Houston next week, and then the final week of the PGA Tour in 2021 is the RSM Classic.
So
I would have got nowhere near Lucas Herbert. Absolutely nowhere near him. He was 53rd for fairways hit, 58th for greens in regulation, and putted lights out and scrambled like a dervish. Yeah. Yes, another European Tour stalwart who's quickly racked up their first PGA Tour victory, similar to Garrick Higo back at the Palmetto.
Yeah, well, it gets the win off the back very, very early on, doesn't it? Or early on enough not for it to be something that's hindered him further down the line. Yeah, he's a good player. He can win, as you've seen, and wins over on the European Tour as well.
What did he win in Dubai? In Europe,
yeah, it was the more recent.
It was one of the desert events, wasn't it?
There was another one. I forget now off the top of my head. Stay there, and I'll tell you.
Get on Wikipedia, Paul. The thing with Herbert, well, the other thing I've noted, of course, you've now had Sung Jae-in, Hideki Matsuyama, and you've now had Lucas Herbert. Three internationals win four of the last PGA Tour events.
He's won twice in Dubai. He won the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. Oh, sorry, no. There's a link, though. He won the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. I just saw Dubai. And just
it was the Irish Open I was thinking of more recently. Yeah. But yes, it's becoming... that's three wins since 2020. Decent prospect.
Beat Patrick Reed by a shot. Who shot that 6-under in those? It's actually a final round of golf that I thoroughly enjoyed because it was so different to the PGA Tour norm. People struggling for pars. It was great. People really working hard to earn their vast amounts of money. Patrick Reed was tied second with another international, Danny Lee, who popped his head up from absolutely nowhere. So, yeah, interesting tournament down in Bermuda. And we do have a lot more of the same this week in the form of the... This is a mouthful, chaps. The Worldwide Technology Championship at Mayakoba. And you have to say, it's a high-quality field. This is the best field I've ever seen at Mayakoba by an absolute mile. So you've got a $7.2 million prize fund. I would not be surprised if Worldwide Technology have thrown a few extra quid at it as well. Because we've got Justin Thomas, the world number 7. He heads the entry list. We've got Finau, Koepka, Anser, hometown boy, Tyrrell Hatton, Billy Ho, Scotty Scheffler, Patrick Reed, Matt Fitzpatrick, Wacky Neiman, Matthew Wolf, Will Zalatoris, and defending champion Victor Hovland, all playing in Mexico from within the world's top 40. You can throw in as well European challenges from Shane Lowry, Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, Ian Poulter, Francesco Molinari, and Danny Willett. And I haven't mentioned quite a few players that you raise your eyebrows at going, oh, that's good. It's a very, very strong field. I'd go as far as saying, well, I think the CJ Cup was a very strong field as well, wasn't it? That no-cut event. But for a non-cut event, this is definitely the best field we have seen this side of the Tour Championship in the restarted season. So we've got Thomas at 14-1 favourite. The defending champion, Victor Hovland, is an 18-1 chance. Anser backed into 20-1. And Anser does fit the pattern here. Relatively short hit up, fairways and greens, man. Tony Finau at 25s. Billy Horschel at 30. I had a very close look at Horschel because he's playing some cracking golf as we witnessed at Wentworth. Has a good record here. Tyrrell Hatton also 30-1. Then we've got Brooks Koepka, Scotty Scheffler, and Aaron Wise at 33-1. Who'd have thought Scotty Scheffler, Brooks Koepka and Aaron Wise all at the same price of 33-1? That shows you how well Wise has been playing recently. Patrick Reed at 35s after his second place finish last week. And then a host at 40s. Shane Lowry, Will Zalatoris, Tadel Gooch, Cameron Tringali, Matthew Fitzpatrick. It's 45 to 1 bar the rest. Headed up by Wolf Garcia. So, El Chameleon. The Riviera, I've got it wrong, it's the Riviera Mayo section of the Caribbean coastline of Mexico. And it's a course we see every year. It's a Greg Norman design. It's coastal. And it's very much a resort golf course. And when I say resort, it's got a beautiful, you know, surrounded by beautiful hotels. You can see why the PGA Tour comes here. And the scoring here is low every year. 20 under for Hovland last year. Brendan Todd at 20 under. Matt Kuchar has the tournament low score record at 22 under par in 2018. Then we've had Kizire in 2017 at 19 under. Pat Perez at 21 under in 2016. And Graham McDowell, I did mention he'd be popular. He was 18 under when he won in 2015. We've also had Hoffman. Harris English won his second ever PGA Tour victory here in 2013. He'd actually won earlier that year in Southwind, the St. Jude Classic that year. Johnson Wagner and Cameron Beckman. Now, those were wins for Wagner and Beckman when they played this around Easter time, because it used to be an alternate event. I think it might have used... It used to alternate, but I think it went up against the World Match Play for a few years.
Yeah, quite possibly.
2013 forward, it's been one of these full series events as part of the new season. So, English, Hoffman, McDowell, Perez, Kizire, Kuchar, Todd and Hovland have been the defending champions since this became a full status PGA Tour event. Coastal, relatively thin fairways, but it's one of these golf courses. It is very, very similar to Bermuda last week, where you've got two sets of nine. One of the sets of nine is more inland. It's more tree-lined. Well, that's relative because it's all palm trees. But there's a lot more mangroves and that kind of action going on. You then get the second nine, which is far more coastal, exposed, beautiful views of the sea. If the wind is up, it can be... a tougher test around here. The scoring will undoubtedly be dictated by the level of the wind, as we so often see on coastal golf courses. And I'm just quickly getting Windfinder up to see where we're at. And looks to me as if we're in for a very calm tournament this week. So I could see Kuchar's 22 under being under threat. I think it's just going to be a scoring fest. Paspalum Greens as well. So if you're new to golf betting, Paspalum. What have we seen recently on Paspalum? We saw the PGA Championship. That was played on Paspalum Greens this year. Up at Keir Island. This is a regular Paspalum golf course, as is the Puerto Rico Open, which they play every year, and the Corrales Championship. So you're going to see crossover between Puerto Rico, which Victor Hovland won last year and then came here and won this. So he's a double king on Paspalum greens. You're going to see crossover definitely with Corrales, which they play in the Dominican Republic in springtime. And you might even see a bit of a crossover. They used to play the CIMB Classic over in Malaysia at TPC Kuala Lumpur. That was won twice by Justin Thomas. Those were also Paspalum Greens before they changed them to Bermuda. This is all, of course, documented in my full betting preview, which, as ever, is available at Golf Betting System. Difficulty of the course... depends on the wind, as I said earlier, but last year, one day, which I think believe was the Thursday, was blowing gusting 25 miles an hour. So the scoring was a lot higher on the Thursday. Then the wind disappeared. Even then, it was the 39th easiest of 51 courses on the tour last year. I think that difficulty rank will be closer to mid-40s this year, because... yes. There doesn't look like a lot of wind. I mean, I'm looking maximum 10, 12 miles an hour, which for these guys is nothing. The fairways, I think there hasn't been a lot of rain here, which is rare because it's clearly in the tropics. And what you tend to get is a lot of rain. And of course, it's 28, 30 degrees, so it just burns away. But so it appears to have been dry for about 7 to 10 days here. So I reckon we might see something very similar to what we saw. I think it was 2017, where the fairways were actually running a little bit, but as ever. And they certainly need to here with 30-degree heat. They'll be watering those greens. So the greens will be 10 on the stimp. Very, very soft greens, very receptive. So it's just going to be target goal. Always one of those courses for me, I would be highly surprised. Now, I'll get this out there, and clearly you can shoot me down next week when he wins. I'd be very surprised if a Lucas Herbert sort won this. You know, errant off the tee, not high GIR, and scrambles and putts his way to victory. Can't see that this week, especially with no wind. We're talking about Todd here. We're talking about Kuchar, Harris English. They're all kind of similar players, similar names. Even Pat Perez, fairly high GIR when his irons are working well, not long off the tee. Plotters. I think we need plotters this week, gentlemen.
Yeah, yeah.
Plotters over power.
Yeah, I mean, in an event like last week where the wind picks up and players are missing greens, then short game and putting can come to the fore a bit more. But it does look like it's going to be a low scoring event this week. And if you're giving yourself chances on the greens and taking those chances, then it's going to be far more about that kind of precision and putting performance, I expect.
I mean, I'm just looking at some of the numbers from last week, Paul. You had Patrick Rogers, who finished in the top four last week. He hit 20 of 56 fairways. He was 74th for dry fairways hit. If he does that this week, he'll miss the cut because there's so much trouble off the tee. He'll have wet balls. He'll probably have balls that are eaten by alligators and all manner of stuff going on. I think you've got to be a bit straighter, which tends to weed them out a little bit. Winning price of winners here. I mean, and you can say with Victor Hovland, the thing with Victor Hovland is he's such a fantastic driver of the golf ball. Not only is he prestigiously long, but he's prestigiously straight. So he's almost like you could categorise him as a plotter plus. So high GIR, high fairways hit, and a bomber. He's like the perfect mix for somewhere like this. And that's what he did. He just basically hit tons and tons of fairways. And I think he topped GIR. I'm just getting my sheet from last year. Yeah, 84.7% GIR last year. 61 of 72 greens. Yeah, that was just prestigious ball striking from Victor Hovland. And he was tied 13th for fairways hit. And yeah. 8th for driving distance. So long, straight, pounding greens got the job done.
Yeah, and if you just take a few of your chances, then you're gonna be in the.
So if you're long, you've got to be prestigiously straight. You've got to be high GIR, and you've just got to be a plotter. I think it's a plotter's court golf course where they say it's all about finding the right side of fairways for those approach shots to make the birdies. I'm just looking at the previous winning odds. Since 2010, it averages out at 71-1. Past 8 renewals, so again, since Harris English in 2013, when it became a full PGA Tour event in the full series, 63-1. The shortest price winner we have had was Victor Hovland last year at 22-1. And I expect, you know, people say, oh, that's the quality of the field. And I can see that. As you're getting more and more elite players, you would expect more elite players to actually win the tournament. But Hovland at 22-1. Todd was 110-1 chance, bearing in mind he'd won the outing before. Matt Kuchar was 60-1. Patton Kizzire, who was on a tear, not dissimilar to Aaron Wise, was a 70-1 chance. And Pat Perez was 125-1. With Graham McDowell, a 33-1 chance in 2015. So yeah, I had good fun with this one actually. It was a bit of a, It was one of those selection processes for me where my shortlist wasn't actually that long. There were players in there. Let me mention a few that I didn't go for. JJ Spawn. I think he could go well again at a big price because Spawn's had a third here in the past and he was very, very prestigious last week. 16th for fairways, 16th for fairways hit Spawn and 6th for greens in regulation. Those are the kind of numbers we want to be seeing this week. So Spawn was one that I could have gone for. Graham McDowell again. Had a great week last week. McDowell, he was iron straight. I think he was 2nd for fairways hit. His greens in regulation slipped slightly on the Sunday, but I was seeing him in the top 10 for greens in regulation going into Sunday. So he's clearly got his game on the move. Russell Knox, another one that missed out on a each-way place for me last week by one shot. Knox's numbers were prestigious last week as well. 6th for fairways hit, and he was tied 1st for greens in regulation. The trouble I always have with Knox is 80-1. And the guy hasn't had a top 10 since, I think, February. I always find Knox's price tight, extremely tight. But, you know, if we're looking for an archetypal type of player that will do well around here, Russell Knox ticks a hell of a lot of boxes. Even Danny Lee, you know, Danny Lee, he's had a top... I think he's finished 2nd here in the class, Lee. Clearly played some fantastic golf last week to finish tied for 2nd. Anything to add in terms of the course or your memories of the course, gentlemen? Or anything to stop my mouth from moving furiously as I take a sip of tea?
No, I think you've kind of summarised it quite right. I think it is more about accuracy. And you don't often get that on the PGA Tour. It's often more about just wanton bombing. But a bit more about accuracy, a bit more about plotting your way around this week. I don't think we should underestimate the Paspalham Greens either.
Paspalham.
Yeah, I think those players who've performed well on this kind of surface in the past should be worth a look. And you put a handy list of players who've won on the PGA Tour in the past.
I was just going to go through them, Paul. You've led me into it.
I think it's worth it because some players respond to it. You know, Hovland's a case in point, and he's the kind of guy either side when he comes over and plays in Europe as well, or you know, in these future PGA Tour events, is one that we should certainly be shortlisting because of the surface at the point at which he plays those courses in the future. But yes, the list.
There are undoubted Paspalham positive players, aren't there? I mean, this is since 2008, since I kept my detailed records. Hovland, GMAC, Ryan Moore, Pat Perez and Justin Thomas have won 2 PGA Tour events on this putting surface. And then single wins for Joel Damon, Tony Finau, Bryce Garnett. Now, Garnett, perfect kind of player for this. Low scoring coastal, throwing Bryce Garnett. Brian Gay, Emiliano Grillo, who if he wasn't such a choker, would be a perfect bet this week. Charlie Hoffman, John Huh, Patton Kizzire, Matt Kuchar, Ian Poulter. His win came at the WGC in China on Paspalham, believe it or not, Ian Poulter. Hudson Swafford, he's won at Corrales. Terrible record here for some reason, though, which for Swafford, you'd have thought that this is his kind of course, so there's something about it he doesn't seemingly like, whether it's shot shape or...
He might turn that round at some point, I guess.
Yeah, he's the sort. Brendan Todd, of course, and Martin Traynor, of all people, who won the Puerto Rico Open a couple of years ago. So they are all Paspalham winners on the PGA Tour. So yeah, there's different angles, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you got some courses over on the European Tour as well, which may correlate. And you know, some of the you tend to get this kind of Paspalham surface on coastal courses, don't you? So looking at events like Mauritius. You mentioned the events played at Kuala Lumpur. There were some older European Tour events played at Kuala Lumpur as well.
You're also going to throw up Saudi Arabia, aren't you? Yeah. Because of Graham McDowell.
Yeah. I mean, and that correlates again with the list that you just ran through a second ago, doesn't it? So there are a few to consider. Some of the China tracks, as you mentioned, some of the ones used historically for the China Open were on Paspalum as well. So
go on then, boys. Tell the listeners that you've both gone for Graham McDowell this week.
Well, Steve, seeing as you've ditched him after last week's... I don't think he did a great deal wrong, did he? We were all on him last week. So, you know, seeing what was a semi-contending position, I guess, going into the final day, and then it was just par after par after par after par, wasn't it?
Right. Which in those conditions isn't the worst of performances. There were people shooting 6 and 7 over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was decent.
Yeah, there were. I mean, there were also people shooting 6, 7, 8. What did Stallings shoot? 9 under?
I know, that's incredible round from Stallings.
I think he's worth sticking with. He won here in 2015. Two wins on the surface, as you mentioned a second ago. Also won that Saudi International last year, which over on the European Tour, which is always in decent company. They always put their hands in their pockets and get over a decent field. So he did beat a very strong European Tour field for the European Tour anyway. 12th last week in the end, which from our perspective was just outside of the paying places. So a bit of disappointment there. But what was he last week? 80. I got early 100 to 1 with fewer places last week. 150.
I took 80 at the 8s, yeah. 80 at 8, so yes, yeah, right, I think you managed to get 100 at shorters, yeah. Short number.
150 this week with some of the extended places out there, so, you know, nearly double.
It was eye-catching.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was actually his best finish last week since March, and second for driving accuracy, as you say, fourth for driving accuracy the week before, or the event before, rather, at the Shriners. Which kind of suggests he's sorted something out with the driver, which was kind of a bit uncharacteristically poor over the summer. There was some iffy driving performance weeks and a number of missed cuts as well. So would kind of suggest that he's found something, he's been working on something, and something's clicked with the long game. And on an event like this, where I think a bit of accuracy is going to be rewarded, I was quite happy to give him another chance this week. Hopefully he doesn't just plod through it and par his way to a missed cut, because you do need to make, 4, 5, 6 birdies a day, really, this week to be in the mix. But
you've got to be shooting level 65s, haven't you? Level 65s, I reckon, to get the job done, which would be, 22 under, 24 under? 24, I think it's going to be something like that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be in the 20 under, maybe a little bit deeper.
My maths is terrible. That's 20 under, isn't it? Yeah. 20
but, under. But yes, I think that's the kind of number. So he's the only player I've backed so far this week, McDowell. I think he's
level 66s for 20 under. That'd be right, wouldn't it? Yeah.
It's part 70, yeah. Part 71. Yeah.
But there are going to be people throwing in 62, 61.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Day to day, peaks and troughs. Yeah. But if you're shooting 71s and 73s, in one round, you're going to have. I'd be surprised if you could get close to actually the top 5, top 7. I think you've got to have a consistent, 68, 67s are going to have to be your weakest round.
Yeah.
It's going to be that low.
Got to keep chipping away.
Why did you drop McDowell then? Is because you can't see him putting 4 of those rounds together, Steve? The price is bigger. The performance last week is arguably pretty much what you want. I mean, it's almost a successful punt. He's one shot outside the places. I mean, that's a good week, but for the fact you didn't get a return.
He was very accurate. So he was 5th for total accuracy last week, which is exactly what I want. I just didn't see enough greens hit. He ranked top 20 greens in regulation. The pattern I see here of winners are people that are literally top 5, top 7, top 10 greens in regulation the week before. I mean, I'm splitting hairs here. But in the end, I went for James Hull at that kind of price point, who was a 200 to 1 chance for me, James Hull. And he played at the Zozo. He finished 15th, so similar kind of position to GMAT. He was 7th for greens in regulation. Harm was what, ninth going into the final round. And that Jim, I just find with James Harm, you see with him when he's peppering fairways and greens. And you know, with James Harm, he has got a top three, top five in him. And, you know, he's a two-time winner on the PGA Tour, two big tournaments as well, Riviera and Quail Hollow. I just took him. I just took Harm at 200 to 1. I think he's the kind of sneaky... I always remember James Harm doing well in the desert. And those desert tournaments are always that 20, 22 under. I can remember him... Way back at Humana Challenge, finishing top three. He always does well at the Shriners. Always does, plays well in Phoenix, which is always a bit higher scoring. But he's that kind of, when he's on form, and we know with James Harm, he can have months when he's in horrible form. But when he's in that kind of arrow straight off the tee and peppering greens, he will start to make some putts and he will start to pile up birdies. And with the calm conditions this week, I just favoured Harm personally over G-Mac. So clearly, Harm will miss the cut and G-Mac will win. But
that's the plan.
We all make our decisions, don't we? We all make our decisions. But yes, I knew, as I said, that McDowell's going to be hugely popular and for right reasons. Knox will be popular. Bryce Garnett's going to be popular. All these kind of guys. And I don't put anyone off backing them because they're absolutely bob on for the golf course we're playing this week.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Harm, isn't he? Because, as you said, he goes way off the boil, but...
Mate, he goes off grid completely, doesn't he, yeah, for months on end?
He does, yeah. I thought there was a stretch at the end of last year where he was in some consistent form, which was pretty unlike him, and some of the prices being quoted about him were really prohibitive in terms of...
The last time I remember him, he went nuts on a Sunday, and he was like 9-under through the first 12 holes. I don't know if that was at Carrara's, you know. And when he hit the top of the leaderboard, although he was like, I don't know, he was like 6 or 7 holes in front of the leaders. And I think he realised at that point, oh, God, and all of a sudden the birdies stopped and the par was and the odd bogey threw in and he got a top six finish. But he's that kind of player, Harm. I just thought the conditions suited him. So I had 200 to 1, 8 place each way. Nice Paddy, I got on Harm.
It's the James Harm kind of winning price, isn't it? That's the kind of how he rolls.
The one I took from last week, who I've kept patience with, which isn't Graham McDowell, is actually, and this is all based upon the weather forecast, it's actually Adam Hadwin. And last week, I was kept staring at Hadwin, and I kept coming up with reason after reason why I wasn't going to pick him. At 33 to 1, which is exactly what I did with Hideki Matsuyama the week before. I can't back him, he can't part, this, that, and the other, and he won at 16 to 1. So, in the end, I put Hadwin up. But my distinct fear with Hadwin, and it is borne out on the predictor model for our wind variable, is he's not the best wind player. And sure enough, when I checked the round, he was in the wrong side of the draw, the Thursday morning. Gusting 35 mile an hour side draw, he shot 3 over because he can't. He's not a great wind player. That's just fact. So if you ever see Adam Hadwin and you fancy him and it's going to be a windy tournament, do not back him. So anyway, I did. But with no wind this week, I really do fancy Hadwin. And it's feast or famine here. 5 starts, 3 miscuts, all when the wind's been blowing. And then when the wind's laid down, he's had 2 top 10 finishes here. And he does fit the mould. And the numbers that he actually produced at Bermuda were fantastic. He tied 4 greens in regulation with Russell Knox, tied first. He was also 16th for fairways hit. So if you actually look at that in terms of, he was 4th for total accuracy, which is the fairways and greens combined. He was also 12th for ball striking. And as we know with Adam Hadwin, sneaky, sneaky, sneaky scorer. You know, you just look at any of these desert golf course events. Hadwin has a fantastic record at Shriners. He was 6th there a couple of weeks ago. You look at him at a PGA West where they play the American Express, which was the Humana Challenge, which was the Bob Oak Classic. Fantastic round that golf course. For me, he's always the sort that on a shorter test where you know it's going to be 18 to place an each way bet or 20 under, 22 under to win, Hadwin's the sort I always take a very close look at. And with the wind laying down this week, I think Hadwin's going to go well. And we're seeing this kind of renaissance of international players as the President's Cup starts to build momentum in terms of qualification. I could again see Hadwin, who's been in the international team for the last two President's Cups, starting to pull performances together. I just couldn't turn down at 100 to 1. So yeah, 100 to 1, 8 places each way with Betfair or Paddy Power on Adam Hadwin I got yesterday. One of those kind of plotters who can go lights out with the putter. So yeah, Hadwin and Hahn. And I'm peppering, you know, 70 to 1 average winning price of this tournament. I've taken the top of the board out of my thought process whatsoever. So I'm just going for players that I really like the look of in terms of they drove the ball well on their last outing, high GIR, and I know that they're sneaky scorers. So, Seamus Power. What can you say about Seamus this year? One, I've gone 55 to 1, 8 place each way again with Betfair, Paddy Power and Seamus Power. He's had his best ever year as a professional golfer. He jumped from 437th to 113th in the world with three top 10s, two top 20s, and then, of course, Barry, you had the patience to land him when he won the Barbasol Championship. 21 under was his winning score where he beat JT Poston in a playoff. So I just think Power, he's been sneaky good. I think he missed the cut on his first outing of the year. It's not as if he's dining out on the success. He's then finished 21st at the Shriners. And again, 12th place last week at the Bermuda Championship. Now, if you just said to me, Seamus Power doing well in a windswept golf tournament where 12 under, 14 under was almost winning, I'd say, well, that's not really Power's game. Power, he likes an 18 under, a 20 under, a 22 under. That's the tournament that Seamus Power likes. And I just liked his numbers from last week. He was very straight off the tee, 12th for driving accuracy. He was 14th for greens in regulation. So that actually came through. Listen to these numbers. First for total driving, 8th for total accuracy, and 1st for ball striking, Seamus Power last week. He's had a couple of top 10s at Corrales on Paspalum. And actually, when he came here, which I think was only his 4th ever PGA Tour event way back in 2016, it was one of those renewals here where there was no wind and he shot 68, 66, 64 and he was in 4th spot going into Sunday. So yeah, Seamus Power for me. I think if he's in 4th spot in 2021 as opposed to 2016 when he was a Tour rookie inexperienced, you could see him hanging around and potentially winning. So love Seamus Power, 55 to 1. And then I've nailed this 50 to 1 spot. I've gone 50 to 1 on Wacky Neiman. I've gone 50 to 1 with Maverick McNealy. And I've gone 50 to 1 with Russell Henley. Who are those kind of, I think for me, short course plotters, been finding something recently. I mean, Henley's numbers are outstanding. When he played the CJ Cup the other day, he was 25th, but he was, let me just scroll down. He was 17th for total driving, 1st for total accuracy, 6th for ball striking, and he was 2nd for greens in regulation behind Ricky Fowler. So love Henley. He's won at the Sony Open, has a good record by the coast, RSM Classic, all the tournaments you'd want to hear. Good at Kapalua as well. He's had a third there. The only thing that might derail Henley is he doesn't seem to... I mean, it's always his putting, isn't it? But if the putter clicks this week, I can't see why he can't putt on Paspalum as opposed to Bermuda, because he's a Bermuda-positive player and they seem to carry over. So Henley's due for me. Maverick McNealy, we almost scored him on him a few weeks ago at the Fortinet where he finished second. Again, I just think this kind of short course... He's been driving the ball well. He's been hitting, I think he was 7th for greens in regulation in Japan the other week. Finished with a 65-6, 5 under par. He was 12th here last year. And his weekend score was second only to Victor Hovland here 12 months ago. So clearly something on the course clicked where he got his head around it, what he needed to do. So 50-1 on McNealy. And then Joaquin Neiman, my favourite Chilean golfer. I prefer Joaquin, you know, still over Mito. But, you know, I should start the Chilean supporters club, I think, for Joaquin and for Mito Pereira. But, yeah, I don't know. You look at Joaquin, top 30 in the world. He won the Green Buyer at 21 under par. And I just think on golf courses that are short with big greens, I think his long but quite straight driving, his high GIR game, and this guy can shoot low scores. It actually surprised me. You take 2021 to date, he shot 25 under par at the season opening Tour of Champions at Kapalua, lost in a playoff to Harris English. Harris English has won here, so there's some correlation. He then went the week after to the Sony Open at Waialae. He shot 20 under par there and lost by a shot to Kevin Na. Kevin Na's finished fifth here, and as you know, Kevin Na's shorter courses. Again, correlation all the way. You've only got to look at the champions list of the Sony Open and correlate it to here. Johnson, Wagner, Matt Kuchar, it's all over it. Sony Open and this tournament correlate so closely. And then, a couple of months ago, up in Detroit, short par 72, large greens. He lost in a playoff to Cameron Davis that week, and he shot 18 under par that week. So he can shoot extremely low scores, Joaquin Neiman. So I'm on Neiman as well. So just to finalise mine, Neiman, McNealy, Henley, all at 50-1. Seamus Power at 55s. Adam Hadron at 100s. And James Harn at 200s. Barry, did you have any interest in Seamus Power this week? Or were you just kind of scanning over him and he was not entering your head whatsoever?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He's more than three times the price that he won at. Very interesting. And it's
those numbers just snuck up on me. But yeah, very. I mean, first for total driving and ball striking last week.
Yeah, loves a birdie fest. So
yep.
Yeah, couldn't ignore that. I'm kind of, yeah, straddling the GBS podcast here because I'm also on GMAC because it just makes an awful lot of sense. Punching up some let's say key metrics or things that I think will work this week. Kyle Stanley popped up. I didn't dig too much deeper into it. The actual results don't really match the let's say the stats that he's showing, but at 175-1, I just kind of grabbed a little bit of it. And another one from the way outside that I somehow managed to arrive at was Martin Laird.
Oh,
200-1.
Great tip. Yeah, I had a very, very close look at Martin Laird.
He was 11th.
He impressed me the other week in Shriners because he was defending and he was, again, had a good week, didn't he, Laird?
Yeah, and just digging back into it, his record over the years, he seems to have he seems to like playing good golf around this time of year, October, November. So, his record at this tournament is not anything to write home about, but he does have a 13th out of his four appearances here. So that was enough for me to just say 200-1 is nice. Thanks very much.
Yeah, that's a good bet on Laird. He was 14th for total driving, 16th for total accuracy, and 9th for ball striking when defending at the Shriners 3 weeks ago. Just top 20 GIR, yeah. And 11th, yeah. Laird, that's probably the one because there was a toss-up for me, GMAC, Laird or Harn for my 200-1 price, or what, that high triple digit. Yeah, Laird, lovely.
No love for Ricky this week, Barry?
I don't know. That's to be determined, and definitely like outside any regular staking plan, just completely emotional backing. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, and it's not the odds are not prohibitive thanks to the strength of the field. It's not the usual punishment the bookies put to Ricky's price. Still probably a bit shorter than where he should be if he was another player, but yeah, may have to. FOMO.
Yeah. Yeah. But now around the 50-1 mark, it kind of fits in with that narrative that Steve was talking about as well.
When he finished runner-up here in 2017, chaps, he was the 10-1 favourite. Got beat by Pat and Kaziah, 70-1. So actually, yeah. What was he with this week? 55s with Bet.
Yeah,
oh, sorry, I needed to mention this. Bet 365 have gone 6 places each way a quarter of the odds this week. That's a cracking offer. So, you know, if you're the kind of guys that bet with BetVictor, Unibet regularly at 6 places a fifth, Bet 365, the full quarter odds, and they've added an extra place this week. So yeah, 6 places and a full quarter of the odds, Bet 365 at the Mayakoba.
Which appears to have popped up overnight, Monday into Tuesday.
Yeah, it wasn't there yesterday. So it's a late decision.
Yeah, they've decided it's a bit more aggressive, which is good. The 6.25 does make a big difference if you get a full each-way place out of it.
Worthy of note. I think that's... Is that us for the Mayakoba? Is there another one to add to the mix?
No, all good. Yeah, let's crack on with the...
let's move to Portugal. The Algarve.
The Portugal Masters, yes.
It's an established tournament on the European Tour, isn't it? So something to get your teeth stuck into.
Yeah, we've got some course form, which is always a positive, which doesn't always happen with the European Tour. But yeah, we're getting towards the business end of the season now as well, aren't we? As the players jostle for position to either make the DP World Tour Championship in a fortnight's time or to save their card. They've got this week, they've got the additional Dubai events next week, which is over on the Fire Course adjacent to the Earth Course over there in Dubai. And then, of course, the cream of the crop will navigate their way over to the Earth Course for the finale in a couple of weeks' time. But for now, it's just 108 players this week. It's a short field. Of course, we're quite late in the year. And daylight is an issue, so there aren't that many players who've got a chance to actually find their way through to Dubai or to save the card this week. Headed by this week, Matt Wallace, who's available in places at 16-1, generally 12 or 14-1. Laurie Canter 20-1, Thomas Peters 25s, Beef Johnson's 25s as well. Minwoo Lee, who's the highest ranked Race to Dubai player out there at the moment, or in this week's field at least, 28-1. Sam Horsfield 30-1. Bob McIntyre, the same price, 30s. Richard Bland, there's a little bit of 33s out there, 40-1 bar those players. So yeah, not a bad field. It'll improve again next week, and of course it'll be monumental for the Earth Course in a fortnight's time. Ladbrokes have gone 7 places each way on this event. They're 8 places at the Mayakoba as well, so there's some decent each way terms available from laddies this week. And of course, you can pop over to the site. There's full details up there. New account offer, Bet5, get 20 in free bets, full T's and C's on the site should you want to take advantage of their 7 places each way on this event, or as I said, 8 on the Mayakoba. Back to your point, Steve. Yes, 14th consecutive year at Villamora. So we've got some course form. There's all of the stats on the site as ever. The track's now known as the Dom Pedro Victoria, but it's the same course that we've seen over the years. The Oceanico Victoria, wasn't it? I think something along those lines back in the day.
Those
old Darren Clark TV ads from back in the day. It's a 7,191-yard par 71. It's a resort course. It's an Arnold Palmer design, flat, exposed affair. Just off the coast, water in play on 7 other holes as well. They try to toughen it up a little bit. It's always been a bit of a birdie fest. They put some extra trees in, and for the 2019 event, they put a new strain of Bermuda rough in as well, which had a marginal effect on winning scores, but you're still going to need to be in the high teens under par, I think, to be in with a sniff on Sunday. It's going to be kind of 16, 18, maybe even close to 20 under, I think, to to really be winning. And on a par 71, that means a lot of birdies. 10 to 15 mile an hour breeze this week's fairly typical for this course. Temperatures high as 60 is not anything particularly warm, but I think it should be a typically scorable week really for the Portugal Masters. Let's go back historically just to give you a flavour of the type of players who've won and the prices. Back to 2010, Richard Green won at 18 under. He was a 50 to 1 shot. Tom Lewis, 21 under the year after, 100 to 1. That was only something like his fourth start on the European Tour back in the day. Shane Lowry won at 14 under, 66 to 1 in 2012. David Lynn, 18 under the year after, 80 to 1. Alex Levy won at 18 under as well. That was off just two rounds. He was a 70 to 1 shot on that weather-affected event in 2014. And then into some deeper prices. Andy Sullivan won in 2015 at 23 under at 50 to 1. Paddy Harrington, 23 under again at 100 to 1 the year after. Lucas Beauregard at 20 under. We were on him that year at 66 to 1.
Mm, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, that's a nice, juicy win, that one. Mm. Remember that very well. 2018, Tom Lewis won again at 22 under at 50 to 1. For his second Portugal Masters win. Stephen Brown won 17 under, 150 to 1, and then George Kutsaya won last year 16 under. He was a 16 to 1 shot. So it's only really George Kutsaya last year at 16 to 1 who wasn't in this kind of juicy price bracket of 50 to 1 or above. And it's always been a kind of an event that you can get your teeth into with some good each way chances if you can look past the players at the very top of the market.
We must have been ripping the hell out of George Coetzee last year at 16 to 1. Yeah, as a podcast, United going, who the hell would back George Coetzee at 16 to 1?
Yeah, well, he'd won over.
What did gorgeous George do? It was a bit of a Sungjae Im moment, Barry.
Yeah, he did. He'd won on the Sunshine Tour either the week before or 2 weeks before. So he'd come in with some hot form, if you can class it that, from the Sunshine Tour. But yeah, I was probably quite disparaging this time last year, or September last year, about his chances at the price. But one he did, and it got a good record here as well. So you could easily make a case for him back, you know, on the back of his recent form at a lower level. And of course, his course form here at the at Villamora. But I wouldn't have gone anywhere near him and didn't go anywhere near him. And if he wins at 16 to 1, then so be it. In terms of the course itself, accuracy, not really crucial here. It's a resort course after all. If you look at the last two winners since they made those tweaks, Stephen Brown, George Kutsaya, both of them top strokes game putting on the week. And I think a decent putting performance combined with an aggressive approach is preferable here. I mean, you're going to have to take on the short par fours. You need to score heavily on the par fives. And you need to put it all together with a decent putting performance. So a bit of aggression. Hit as many greens as you can and then putt lights out on the dance floors is the order of the day, in my view. Some good season forms, a good positive, I think, to take into this. Seven of the 11 winners I mentioned had a win or a runner-up finish in the season to date prior to winning here. The last four winners all had a top 11 finish or better on their previous start, wherever that may have been heading into this event. And course history is generally a positive as well. I mean, George Kutsaya, I mentioned he had decent course form. He had three top 10s here at Villamora before winning. Tom Lewis was already a winner. Lucas Beauregard finished 9th and 12th in his previous two events. The only one in very recent times who didn't have that kind of good course form was Stephen Brown, best of 44th. But then 150 to 1, if you could have plucked him out from relative obscurity, then that would have been your reward back in 2019. Those kind of wins are much tougher to pluck out, aren't they? If you get your reward, should you manage to find one of those gems. Anyway, I've boiled it all down. I've backed five. I have gone towards the top of the market for my first, well, at the top of the market for my first pick, but the rest of them are in this kind of juicy price point, which I mentioned before. At the top, Matt Wallace. I backed him yesterday at 14-1, and Bet365 promptly pushed him out to 16-1 in response to my preview, which kind of shows you how poorly my tips have been playing recently. But anyway, I backed him at 14s, which will go down the record. There is a little bit of 16s out there. Should you want to back him now?
Yeah, still there at Bet365.
Yeah, just to rub it in. I mean, with Matt, for me, he's sitting there 82nd in the race to Dubai. I mean, of course, he's been playing over stateside, hasn't he, for much of the year. So he's got an excuse for not being towards the top end of the race to Dubai. But he's come back over. He's playing this week. He's playing next week. He wants to be playing in Dubai in a fortnight's time. And to do that, he needs a good finish this week and or next week. And then he'll give himself a chance of getting over to the Earth course. He made it as far as the first playoff event over on the PGA Tour. He finished 111th in the rankings, which wasn't too bad for an overall season on the PGA Tour. He finished third at the Texas Open, sixth at the Wells Fargo Championship. They're two good PGA Tour finishes. More recently, 14th at the Shriners, fourth at the 2020 Zozo Championship as well. Recently, so he's been playing much better in some high grade events recently, and he seems in some positive and confident mood, I think, as well. Judging by his Instagram in particular, he's been tweaking in some of his swing thoughts and swing processes, and that seems to be coming into fruition the last few weeks over on the PGA Tour, which bodes well for him. And I think when he's in a positive mood, a positive frame of mind, that can be something that really drives him on. If you look back through his history, his breakthrough on the European Tour came in Portugal at the Open de Portugal back in 2017. We were on in that week, 50-1 or thereabouts it was, which was a nice win. Fourth to the halfway point here in 2018 at Villamoura. He finished eighth overall the following year, 2019, on this course. 64th in the world right now. And I guess that's probably one of his big targets over the next few weeks, again, is to get himself inside that top 50. He's kind of one of these fringy players that kind of hovers around that level, just inside the top 50 or just outside it. But 64th currently, I think there's a big carrot there for Matt Wallace to get moving and to get himself inside that top 50 for year end, which if he finishes the season off nicely over here in Europe, then he could get very close or indeed inside that level. So I've gone win only, 4 points, 14-1 with Matt Wallace to win this week. Then the juicier prices. Joachim Lagergren, I've backed at 60-1. He loves anything that's even remotely close to the coast. And I'll give him another go. He grabbed us that nice each-way return at the Dunhill Links a few weeks back. And I think he can go close to winning here, or at least rewarding us for an each-way place here this week, I think. Looking back at that Dunhill Links, he got a great record at St Andrews, so that was relatively straightforward to pick him that week. His record is not too shabby either. 17th, 14th, 3rd last year in this event. Now, if you look at Lucas Beauregard, we mentioned him before, he's won both this event and the Dunhill Links. So there's some correlation there potentially between the two sets of results. And that's encouraging for a bet on Lagergren. And if we're looking for a decent putter, then these putting stats of late have been really eye-catching as well. First, 19th, 15th for strokes gained putting over his last three starts. He's seeing the ball, he's rolling the ball very nicely. He's seeing the ball find the bottom of the cup as well, which is good. So Lagergren's in. I've also backed Julien Gurrier at 80-1. And similar to Lagergren, he enjoys events that are close to the coast. If you look at his record over the last few years, you'll find a lot of coastal or close to the coast positive performances. Longer hitter, he led here at halfway back in September last year. Couldn't quite keep it going, but finished eighth overall. That improved on his debut performance of 34th. And he showed a little bit of promise that week as well. He closed with a 65 here on debut. So he's got some good low rounds here to his name from two starts. He was third at the Spanish Open last month. 25th at Valderrama as well. that's really not his game, Guerrier. So this is much more to his liking. I think if he can take the positivity that he got from his game from those two Spanish events into this week, then 80-1 could be a nice, juicy price. Also back to Renato Paratore, 66s. I mean, he's another one who played nicely of late. He finished 9th at the Spanish Open. He was 4th heading into Sunday at Valderrama. Didn't quite happen on the final day at Valderrama. He shot a 75 and finished in a tie for 25th in the end. But the three rounds prior to that were really positive. And again, on a course that doesn't really suit, I don't think. 11th in Mallorca on the last on his last start. Again, putting really caught the eye. 6th, 2nd, 2nd for strokes game putting from those three events in Spain. So really putting nicely at the moment. And played 4 times here. His most recent 2 starts, 27th and 21st from his last 2 outings. He's inside the top 10 until Sunday on both of those times. And I think he can build on that. If you look at his most recent win, British Masters, back in last year, 2020, it was the British Masters win that he got. He came into that event after a week off in the top 15 the previous start, which is exactly where he is right now. So perhaps lightning can strike twice with Renato Paratore at 66s. And the 5th and final, a bit longer price, Pep Angles, or Pep Angle, at 150-1. It's a fairly dismissive price, I think, given that he finished 2nd in Mallorca last time out. And he's got the power again to finish or to contend here. It's funny, isn't it? You get some of these players who finish well and they get absolutely slaughtered in terms of their price. But yeah, 150, I was quite surprised, particularly seeing as he finished 12th here in 2018. He started slowly that week, started with a 70 and then shot 65-65 Friday, Saturday to give himself a chance. He was 8th going into Sunday. Didn't quite happen, but he's a bit more accomplished player now. He's won on the Challenge Tour since then. He won last November. He was 2nd on Portuguese soil on the Challenge Tour as well last year. That was behind Garrick Higo, who's since won twice on the European Tour and also is now a PGA Tour champion. And he finished ahead of defending champion George Coetzee that week as well on Portuguese soil. So some good correlation there, I think. And again, that was after a slow start. If he can get a quicker start, if he can get out of the blocks a little bit quicker here this week, then I think he can contend at 150-1. And, well, he can reward each way backers and potentially push on for a win, which would be very, very welcome at that kind of price. So just to recap, Pep Angles, 150-1. Renato Paratore, 66s. Julien Guerrier, 80-1. Joachim Lagergren, 60-1. And at top of the shop, Matt Wallace at 14s, or grab the 16s that's out there and really rub it in for me, who's a win-only bet for me this week. Any fancies from you, Barry?
Due to my lack of success on European Tour for what feels about 12 years, I'm highly limiting my bets. I do like the fact that the field is shorter this week. So I've took a little bit of Joachim Lagergren for all of the reasons you've listed above. Don't need to double down on those. At 66, I was able to boost him to 66-1. So nice. I'll take that. Otherwise, I don't know. I might just hang on and see what happens in running if anybody catches my fancy. I seem to be a little bit out of sync with the European Tour. So just heed the advice or heed the warnings I'm feeling and just dial it back a little bit.
Yeah, I think, for in play bets, that's not such a bad shout because players who get off to a warm start here, you're going to need to keep your foot to the floor in terms of scoring. So,
yeah.
If
this is one of these events, isn't it, where you're not going to get leaders that come from off the pace. You've got to be on the pace from the outset, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's possible to go out there and shoot a Friday, Saturday 62, 61 and push yourself back into contention. But if you're way off the pace, then you're going to be struggling to make the cut from the outset. If there's something that catches your eye at kind of 3, 4, 5 under after the first day, then that could be the play, potentially. What about you, Steve? Anyone catch your eye?
It's the same in Mexico this week. Got to be, I think, winners, something crazy. It's in my previews. Like they're all in the top 10 after round one.
The one that
I always say at this time of year, OWGR, people trying to crack that top 50. Minwoo Lee. He's just playing. He's so close to the gateway, isn't he? 58th in the world right now, Minwoo Lee. If he can finish this season strong,
yeah,
Scottish Open. I always also get the feeling there's always that Lynx-y element to this.
Yeah, it's potentially.
You look at the winners here: Harrington, no, twice. What's the guy's name? Tom Lewis twice. I mean, he made his name on the links, didn't he? Richard Green's a Lynx-y player. Called Shane Lowry. Yeah, there's a lot of Lynx correlation here. Paddy Harrington. Coatesy weren't too bad by the coast either.
No.
Minwoo Lee, of course, he won the Scottish Open this year. And he won it, what was it, 19 under, something like that?
Yeah,
that kind of 18 bad. Under. I think this is the kind of course that he'll thrive on, Minwoo Lee.
Yeah, potentially. I don't know if you caught the tweet that Ben Coley put out yesterday, but well worth a look if you fancy Minwoo Lee, because there's a correlation here between Lucas Herbert's wins and Minwoo Lee winning pretty much immediately afterwards as well over the last few years. So if you like those kind of quirky trends, then that might be another one to catch on to.
The fact that he finished second at Valderrama, That to me shows a versatile sort that's clearly going to be a world elite that can actually dumb it down from Lucas Herbert's actually just cracked. Yeah, that win this last week, he jumped from 70th to 43rd in the world. So that's likely going to be a Masters invite for Mr. Herbert. And Minwoo Lee, I wouldn't be surprised if he follows him in. Good player. They've got a cracking crop of talented players, Australia. Young sorts like Smith, Minwoo Lee, and now Herbert.
Yeah, an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, we could do it.
They should have a good team, the present international team this year, President's Cup.
They will. I was just about to say we could do it nabbing them for the European team the way things are looking right now, but things can change pretty quickly over a year. So we might be in a very different mood about the European team this time next year.
Yeah. I think that's us, gentlemen.
Indeed.
It's felt so long since our last podcast, but it was very enjoyable. Thank you for your time. I hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck, chaps.
Good luck, boys. Good luck, listeners. Let's get some wins this week.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Best of luck to the listeners, and we will be back again next week. So enjoy your golf betting. See you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.